in a fresh set of principles, the 12 points of AA tradition, those principles that we AAs trust with God's help will contain us in unity for so long as He may need us. We began to develop many principles which were entirely contrary to custom in the modern world. We ran counter to society in many, many respects. Many of our traditions are almost paradoxical. Of course, the very first one is just plain horse sense. In effect, our common welfare should come first, for personal recovery depends upon unity. We knew that we had to hang together or hang separate. Then the next one has to do with the idea of a group conscience. And looking back a few years, I couldn't imagine such a thing as a group conscience. I thought I was the conscience for this group. How well I can remember the first time the group conscience spoke to me and began to teach me. Things had been going pretty rough. We were awful broke over at Clint Street. It was about the third year of AA. One day, old Charlie Towns, up there at the hospital, called me in his office and he said, "Bill, you're helping sober up all these drunks. They're getting good jobs. They're getting on, but you and Lois are broke. Why don't you come in here? Let me give you an offer. Let me put you on my staff as a lay therapist." This thing actually began here in Towns Hospital. You had this funny experience of yours. "I think this society will someday fill Madison Square Garden. And Bill, I'll go further, I'll give you a third interest in the place." Oh, that sounded awful good to Lois and me. Better to me than it did to her. I told her that night when, after a day's hard day's work, she was cooking supper for the drunks at Clinton Street. The house was full of them, you remember. It sounded awful good. And I stilled the last of my fears by saying to myself, "Well, even the Bible says that the laborer is worthy of his hire." Then comes a little meeting down in that front parlor over at Clinton Street. I tell the meeting of this new opportunity. Finally, someone begins to speak. I now realize that he spoke for the group conscience. And he said, "But Phil, that will be the beginning of a professional. That will tie us up to a particular institution. Bill, you can't do this thing to us. You say it's ethical? Of course it's ethical. Perfectly ethical for you to be a lay therapist. But Bill, you can't do this thing to us. It isn't good enough. Aren't you the fellow who has often told us that sometimes the good is the enemy of the best?" So spoke the group conscience to me, saying, "Bill, it isn't good enough. You can't do this to us." And thank God, I listened and I obeyed. Since that time, I have been a pupil of AA and not his teacher. Then we came to have very queer ideas about membership in AA. At the beginning, scared to death, we made all sorts of membership rules excluding undesirables. We couldn't have the... Well, we were scared. We were afraid of these people. They might tear us apart. We had so many membership rules at one time that when all listed on one piece of paper would have kept us all out. they'd been in effect at once. I remember one case in particular. At Clinton Street, a fellow sober 6 months, allowed to speak in a meeting for the first time, got up and said, "This is all wonderful, all except this God business. And as for this God business, to hell with it. We don't need it." And we deacons took him in a corner and said, "Look, Jimmy, you can't talk that way around here." He said, "Is that so? Is that so? I don't have to belong to God, believe in God to belong to this. Right in the front of that book you're putting together, it says the only requirement is an honest desire to stop drinking. I have got that honest desire. I have stopped. I got the family together. I got a job. I'm working with drunks. So am I a member or am I not?" Well, he had the deacons where the hair was short. So we grudgingly admitted that he was a member. But we waited in high hope that he would soon get drunk. By and by, he accommodated us. Not a soul went to see him. And in his agony in that hotel room, he hit bottom and hit it right, and hasn't had a drink to this day, and became founder of our Philadelphia group. And now we look back and say, suppose we had closed the door of the court of last resort to Jimmy. Where would he be and all those he helped and all those they have helped since? So today, you're a member of AA if you say so, putting the ordinary social custom exactly in reverse. Nobody can keep you out. You declare yourself. Then you remember, I told you about the episode with Mr. Rockefeller. Well, we've come to adopt his view that this society should have no professional class, that we ought to pay our own bills, and God knows we can. The members of this society are earning $600 million a year. We have something to give to the community. Of course, we'll pay our own bill. We had a bad time with that professional business, though. The time they hired old Tom Mulhall down to the clubhouse for janitor. We were just going to give him a free room, you know. And Tom said, "Ain't you going to pay me nothing?" Oh, we said, "No, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, Tom. You can't make any money out of it." Tom says, "Listen," he said, "I think you guys have got a nerve. You want me to do 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, a job that you guys can't or won't do. What you want is a janitor. And you ain't willing to pay for it, and if you don't pay me, I don't work. See?" "And what has that got to do with the 12th step?" said Tom. So, very painfully, we discovered that we could hire a caretaker, we could hire a secretary, we could even hire an author like me. Incidentally, folks, I got a raise recently. Every time you buy one of them books, I got you for 52 cents. How do you like it? Well, then came other problems. When that foundation was set up, it took in a terrific territory. We could research, we could educate, we could do anything but lobby for prohibition. But in late years, we see that AA should stick to its single purpose, that of carrying the message face to face to that other alcoholic, the purpose for which we are so well suited. The thing nobody else can do. That thing we should do and do supremely well, instead of many things bad. So that we have decided that AA shall have only one sole aim. We cannot make alliances. We cannot give endorsements. We cannot loan out the AA name, even to the best of enterprises, so that they may have publicity and raise money. on our credit. That would be to divert us from our aim, to confuse us, and finally to make it possible to attach the name Alcoholics Anonymous to all sorts of controversial situations. I know a fellow came in the office one time, said he got a job working for one of the liquor associations. I can be an educator. I said, what kind of education? Well, he said they want to teach people that too much grog is bad for everybody and that these drunks shouldn't drink at all. I said, fine, why don't you hire out? Much surprised, he said, I thought you were against education. I said, on the contrary, I'm very much for it. But what I want to know is this. Do they just want to hire you? He said, what do you mean? Well, I said, do they want something else? Or do they just want you because you're a good publicist, because you had the drinking experience? Well, come to find out, they wanted to be able to state in all their publicity that Mr. Joe Bloch of Alcoholics Anonymous heads up our program of education. Which would mean that in a subtle way, the AA name would be transferred over into a controversial area. I said to my friend, are you going to take the job? You know, in AA, we have no rules, laws, regulations. We only have a tradition. He said, of course I'm not going to take the job. If I took a job like that, pretty soon some screwball would hire out to the Anti-Saloon League for their brand of education, and then the fat would be in the fire and Alcoholics Anonymous would be right in the middle of that controversy. Of course I'm not going. And that's why, as much as we would like, we cannot loan out the AA name, give endorsement, or finance other causes. Like shoemakers, we had better stick to our lands. So that much is decided. We are also certain that as much as we quarrel about things that don't matter too much, we may never quarrel about religion, politics, or reform. Because those are the issues that are dividing the modern world. And thank God, ever since this thing began, I haven't heard a really angry religious or political argument. Today in Ireland, where politics and religion are terrific issues, Alcoholics Anonymous is the only friendly, really friendly roof on which people of those opposing parties can meet. So it must always be with us, or else we may really perish one day.
The rest of this tape is the voices of our co-founders, Bill W. and Dr. Bob.
Co-founders of our fellowship are known to most of us simply as Bill and Bob, two anonymous alcoholics who, during their time with us, brought the gift of sobriety to millions of men and women. Bill was born in 1895 and passed away in 1971. Listen to him now as he reads, in a recording made in 1963, the opening words of the fifth chapter of Alcoholics Anonymous, affectionately known as the Big Book within the AA Fellowship.
Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable are being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose, in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Health measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sat through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an ardor! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection.
Bob, or Dr. Bob as he was often called, was born in 1879. As a physician, he was aware that he was saying farewell to our fellowship when he opened the general meeting of the First International Convention of AA in Cleveland, Ohio, in July 1950. Only 4 months after the following talk, he died of the illness to which you will hear him refer.
My good friends in AA and of AA, I feel I would be very remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to welcome you here to Cleveland, not only to this meeting, but those that have already transpired. I hope very much that they have the presence of so many people, and the words that you have heard will prove an inspiration to you, not only to you, but may you be able to impart that inspiration to the boys and girls back home who are not fortunate enough to be able to come. In other words, we hope that your visit here has been both enjoyable and profitable. I get a big thrill looking over there to see your faces like this, with a feeling that possibly some small thing that I did a number of years ago played a small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill, and I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same thing. We all got the same result in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I've been in bed for five of the last 7 months. My strength hasn't returned as I'd like, so my remarks will of necessity be very brief. But there are two or three things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not laugh at all that for Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring end of the tongue. And if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not going to extend or attempt to that help that has been so beneficial to us to our less fortunate brother. Thank you very much.
As Alcoholics Anonymous grew, its founders knew that the fellowship would be sustained largely by traditions that had developed over the years. Here's Bill back in 1951, discussing some of them with characteristic good humor and wisdom, particularly the anonymous part of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Black shoemakers, we had better stick to our lads. So that much is decided. We are also certain that as much as we quarrel about things that don't matter too much, we may never quarrel about religion, politics, or reform. Because those are the issues that are dividing the modern world. And thank God, ever since this thing began, I haven't heard a really angry religious or political argument. So it must always be with us, or else we may really perish one day. And then we've developed very strange ideas about public relations. You and I love this good old American tradition. You and I love to stand before statues of Lee, Lincoln, Washington. We revere those people. That's not a bad trait in us. But in late years, this country is really carrying that a little far, perhaps. Today, everything in America is transacted on big names, big ballyhoo, big personal publicity, strutting public characters, and sometimes strutting public villains. Now we know that for a society like ours, such things cannot be. For us, weak people that we still are, that would be the road to ruin. So, we are firmly convinced that all of us, everyone, should be a personally anonymous at the general public level, meaning by that the level of the press, the radio, the television, and motion pictures, so that we don't create those public figures, so that we have a standing guarantee that with us, principle shall always come ahead of personnel. And that very policy of anonymity at the public level, I dare say, has brought this society millions of words of freely given public, which has carried this message to us. Every reporter who enters here knows that no one wants anything personal. He is pleasantly refreshed that here is a society which indeed does really place principles before people, and anonymity is the guarantor of that. Indeed, I am beginning to fear that the reputation of this society is far better than its actual character, but we don't tell the reporters that.
Dr. Bob may best be remembered by the title Bill gave him, the Prince of 12th Steppers. By this, Bill meant Bob's extraordinary efforts for many years helping alcoholics on a personal basis to achieve sobriety, in addition to his own medical practice. In Detroit, in 1948, Bob reflected upon the necessity of this service in maintaining his own recovery from alcoholism, and upon the true meaning of giving of oneself in Alcoholics Anonymous.
I said I was quite human, and I get to thinking every once in a while, well, here's this Smith guy, he's a fairly small individual, he's got this liquor situation right to the tail, proved it, demonstrated it, hasn't had a drink for 15 years, probably could knock off a couple, and no one would be the wiser. Well, I'll tell you, I'm not trying to be funny at all, because those thoughts actually enter my mind. And I know just the minute they do exactly what has happened. You see, there in Akron, we have the extreme good fortune, as a great many of you people know, of having a very nice hospital set up at St. Thomas Hospital. With a ward that theoretically accommodates seven, but statistically data sees that it's stretched a little bit, and she usually has about two or three more packed around somewhere. And I almost invariably I find that I haven't been paying quite so much attention to the boys in the ward as I should. Just as sure as that idea that I could probably polish off a couple enters my mind, I think, about the boys in the ward. You've been giving them the semi-brush off here for a few days. You better get back on the job, big boy, before you get into trouble. And I've had a right back and am much more attentive than I had been in the preceding the time that I got this funny idea. But I get it, and I get it every once in a while, and I'll probably continue to get it as long or whenever I get careless about that one thing. You know, back in those early days about which I spoke, before we had the 12 steps, we did have some other things besides the actual biblical verses. I was getting to thinking more of Smith than I was the ward, otherwise I wouldn't have neglected him. And I wasn't being especially loving when these fellows had come there, indicating their desire for help, and I was just a little too busy to give them any, or at least very much, of my time. Don't want to be bothered with the bird.
10 cents to get rid of him? Why, that's easy. You could even stand 2 bits. But not because you love the father, just to be relieved of the nuisance of his hanging on your coat sleeve or what have you. No unselfishness, no love indicated in the transaction at all. But I think that the thing that really counts is really giving a service of yourself, and that almost invariably, not always, but almost invariably requires some effort and some time of your own. It isn't a matter of putting a little quiet money in the dish. That helps, and possibly that's indicated too. But that isn't giving much. That is for the average individual in days like this when most people get along at least fairly well. That type of giving I don't believe would ever keep anyone sober or anywhere near it. But giving of his own effort and strength and time is quite a different matter. And I think that's what Bill learned in New York that I didn't get in Akron.
In closing the same talk, Dr. Bob had occasion to reflect upon how his own happiness and peace of mind were related to the spiritual side of AA's traditions. Then, he turned to the future of the fellowship from his own perspective at the time.
You know, it doesn't make much difference whether a person is drunk or whether they're sober as far as their ultimate aim is concerned. Whether they're drinking liquor or whether they're not, they're still after the same thing, and that's happiness and peace of mind. I harp about that a great deal because that's what we're all after, and we're all after all the time. We want those two things. We want happiness and we want peace of mind. The trouble with us fellows was that we thought we could demand that the world give us happiness in just the particular way in which we wanted to get it, which happened to be by the alcohol route. And we weren't overly successful. But when we take time to find out and familiarize ourselves with and put into practice some of the spiritual laws which it is necessary to follow to acquire those things, then we find that we get them. And I think I've had them in very large measure. Those two things, happiness and peace of mind. And I feel most extremely fortunate, and I feel very grateful and thankful that our Heavenly Father has seen fit that I enjoy them. They're there. Anybody can get them who wishes to, but there do seem to be some rules of the game that we have to follow. But they're here and open and free to everyone who wishes to take advantage of them. And by taking advantage of them means their familiarization with them and putting them in practice and incorporating them in our own thinking and action, and we're bound and determined to get certain results if we do. As I said, it is a very great source of pleasure and gratitude to me to feel that maybe I kicked in my 2 bits of toward a solid. But as I said also, I feel that I was simply used as God's agent. The question might arise, well, we know what AA's done in the last 15 years, but how about it from here on? Where do we go from here? Our membership, I think, is conservatively estimated at present around 70,000. Although, will it be an increase from here on? Well, that'll depend on every member of AA. It is possible for us to do so or not, as we elect. If we might shy of what the political style of handling wants, if we avoid getting messed up with controversial issues such as religious and political issues, wet, dry problems, and so forth. If we ignore unity, to our central office, if we remember the simplicity of our program, if we continue to remember that our job is to get sober and to stay sober and to help our less fortunate brother in doing the same thing, I doubt very much we shall have any trouble, and we shall continue to grow and thrive and prosper.
Dr. Bob mentioned 70,000 AAs in 1948. In 1963, when Bill made the following comments at a dinner in New York City, his guess of 300,000 to 500,000 was probably accurate. But Bill did not live to see Alcoholics Anonymous grow to a membership of roughly 1 million worldwide in 92 countries. The words you will now hear center upon Bill's deep concerns regarding the heritage that all AAs share, and his confidence that it will be maintained in the years to come.
So, years ago, I remember, we used to liken the growing AA to an ever-expanding cathedral, which might one day assume an almost infinite dimension. And as we look at this symbol today, we see on the great floor of that cathedral, 300,000 of us are, maybe 500,000, standing securely, united by the love of each other and the love of God. We who are a little older than most of you here in AA saw the side walls go up and saw them buttressed with the 12 traditions. We saw the spire of the service mount higher and higher, so that today it can be seen in 60 countries, ever beckoning to suffer, no more. Now this edifice is our inheritance. It is a trust. Under God's grace, I know that you and all come will maintain it in all its wonder. That loving hand will attend to its growth beyond any imagination. So there it is, folks. It's yours to have and to hold for so long as God may wish AA to endure.